Thought we would discuss something relating to Hanukkah and a new topic that we'll see actually. It's a bit related to what we talked about in the last bunch of weeks and also Parshas HaShavua. So we all know the basic story of Hanukkah, but if you think about it, there's a very striking thing, which is what is the source of our knowledge? How do we know? Where do we know this story from? So there's a little bit of the story in the Gemara and Shabbos, and Al-Hanisim and a couple of other, we could say, classical or traditional sources. But remarkably, as far as I know, most of the history is really transcribed in the Book of the Maccabees and other sources, and very few details are recorded in Chazal. And the question is why? Why don't we have the story of Hanukkah in Chazal? The truth is, I think this is part of an example of a broader phenomenon. When someone is trying to study Jewish history and they look to traditional sources like Chazal, there's very little there. And the question I think is worth considering is why do we have so little recorded history, we could say in the post-biblical world? Again, there are many stories found in Chazal, and you could try to patch together those stories and create some type of narrative, and great Talmidei Chachamim have tried to do that, like Doros HaRishonim, for example. Even there's a lot of gaps, a lot of speculation, a lot we don't know. Sometimes we have answers from other non-traditional sources, like the books of the Maccabees. Other times we don't have any sources. There's very little systematic history. This is an issue that academics have observed. There's a book called Zachor, which is written by Dr. Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi. He was the chair of history at Columbia. And he wrote a book, Zachor, Jewish History and Jewish Memory. He sort of discusses actually this question, why is there no Jewish history in the post-biblical world? There's only what he calls memory. He notes that even the Rishonim, you don't have it very much. There's some notable exceptions. It's only really in the modern era, almost at least he theorizes, as a response to the non-Orthodox or the secular presentations of Jewish history that Orthodox scholars have responded by to produce our own histories. But the question we need to figure out is why do we have so little history? So that's the first question. I want to add what I think might be a related question, and this is what I said relates to Parshas HaShavua, and that is why is it that it would seem that Chazal have relatively little interest in Pshuto Shel Mikra? Here it's a little different in history because while we don't have much in terms of history in the Rishonim do develop, we could say, the field of Pshuto Shel Mikra. But in Chazal, and before certain Tkufa and Rishonim, there doesn't seem to be much interest. And to appreciate that, let's take a look at a Rashbam and the beginning of this week's Parsha. It's your first source. This is known as a Rashbam is a programmatic statement, as opposed to some Mefarshim who might make a programmatic statement in Hakdama or the like. The Rashbam, for whatever reason, just gets right down to business at the beginning of the Torah. But in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, he decides to tell us why he's doing what he's doing and what he's trying to do. So let's take a look. Ela toldos Yaakov, Yaskilu v'yavinu oavei seichel, ma'ashalim dunu raboseinu, ki ein mikra yotze midei pshuto. Af ki ikara. So first of all, he tells us that even though what I'm going to try to be doing over here is somewhat novel, what the Rishonim, like the Ibn Ezra, maybe Rashi, we'll get to Rashi in a moment, are doing in terms of Pshuto Shel Mikra is somewhat novel. It's not out of the blue. We do have a tradition for this. Chazal tell us a Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto. Now he acknowledges, and this is what we need to figure out, that is not the Iker way to learn. Afki Kara Shel Torah Basalim Lamdenu Lodianu Beremizas Hapshat. Ha hagados vehahalachos vehadinim aydeirichos halashim aydei shloshim shtaim midos shel Rabbi Elazar ben Oshel Rabbi Yosef Glili vaydei shalshos midos shel Rabbi Yishmael. So the ikar way to learn chumash is through drash. That's certainly true in a halachic sense, meaning to say when we want to know halach lemaisa what to do, we follow the interpretations of drash, and it's also true. He sounds like he's saying on narrative portions like our Parsha. And how does Drash work? So this is a bigger topic, which we don't really have time to go into today, but he tells us that through midos, hermeneutical principles, through allusions, an extra vav, a missing letter, an unusual word, some type of inconsistency, through that form of interpretation, that is the Iker way we're meant to learn Chumash. Arishonim, meaning those who preceded him, mitoch chasidusam nisasku lintos achrei drashu shein ikar. So the earlier sources focused on drash because, like he said, that's the ikar way of learning. Mitoch kach lahurgulu baomek pshuto shel mikra. So therefore, they didn't focus much on the omek hapshat. And omek hapshat is of course very, very important. In other words, when we talk about pshat doesn't mean the superficial interpretation. It's not the simplistic interpretation. It's not a literal interpretation. There is an omek hapshat, a depth to pshat. And nevertheless, since that's not the ikar, so the Rishonim didn't focus on that. Ulefish. Rishonim, meaning we don't mean what we call Rishonim, what he's calling Rishonim. He was a Rishon, so those who preceded him. Ulefish amru chachamim al tarbu b'neichem behigayon. Not only that, but Chazal themselves might have advised against actually learning pshat. He's referring to a Gemara Chav Zayin and Beis in Brachos, which is the next source that you have over here. It tells us the advice that Rabbi Eliezer gave to his students upon his death. And one of the things that he told them was, Min'u b'neichem min ha'igayon. The question is, what does that mean exactly? What Rashbam, as well as some other Rishonim, understand is that it's referring to Pshuto Shel Mikra. It's interesting. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn Pshat at all. It says you should be careful about teaching your children. Maybe it means young children, which is an interesting point. You know, one of the things that people like to get all up in arms about, and is the fact that little kids often are taught the drash, the midrashic interpretations, the drashos, the chazals, the stories from chazal before they're actually taught chumash. Oftentimes they don't even know what it says in the chumash because they've heard these midrashim. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I'm not going to answer that question now. I think that it's something that we need to think about. I think we have to be careful about. We have to think very carefully if we're going to do things differently than was done in the past. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't consider it either. But it is an interesting question. It's also an interesting question, which has been in the news a little bit recently, and certainly we're not going to discuss now, which is, do we have the right to make up new things al pi pshat? I think Rashbam would certainly say the answer is yes, as we'll see in a moment. Though we have to do it with tremendous humility. But you argue that this Gemara, assuming it's talking about learning Chumash al-Pi Pshat, is recommending that children not do this, meaning to say perhaps it is better that they not start off with Pshat. Pshat has issues, which we're going to discuss shortly, and maybe you should be older before working on Pshat, or Omek HaPshat, as he says. Agav, I just put something very interesting here for you to look at, though we're not going to get into it now. But the Note of Yehuda in the next source understands that the Gemara, when it says Minu b'neichem min higayon, higayon doesn't mean pshat, like the Rashbam is assuming, but rather it means logic. And why is logic bad? Logic seems to be a good thing to teach your children. So he talks about the dangers of logic. And you can take a look over there at the Tzlach. It's actually not, what he says is interesting, but not shy for us now. So he says that, look, you know, why is it that the Rishonim didn't focus on Pshat? Because Chazal warned against teaching your children Pshat. And I lost the place. And not only that, but V'gam Amru Ha'osek V'mikra Mida V'ed Omeda Ha'osek V'talmud Einu Chamidah G'dol Mizu, which of course relates to the focus on Torah Shebaal Peh, also a very important Chanukah idea that perhaps now the Iker way, the Iker Chelek of Torah that's more shaft to us is Torah Shebaal Peh. Umitoch kach lo hurgalu kol kach v'pshuto shel mikros. So therefore, they didn't focus so much on pshuto shel mikro. Kudamrim sechah Shabbos havina be'er. Bar tamni sari shanin v'garsina kul tamuda v'lavi adana. I learned for 18 years. I knew all the shas, and I still didn't know this concept of ein mikriyos de pshuto. The gam Rabbeinu Shlomo avi imi meir einet gola shepiresh Torah nevim ksuvim nasan leiv lefarsh pshuto shel mikro. So my zaydi tried very hard to explain all of Tanakh based off of pshuto shel mikro, as Rashi frequently tells us. Ani lo basi aliyash pshuto shel mikro. What Rashi thought pshat means is a very interesting question, also well beyond the scope of today's discussion. Rashi, as we know, quotes many midrashos, and he sort of tells us that they're agados that are appropriate. It's a big discussion. What was Rashi doing? Did Rashi think that the midrashim that he's quoting are pshat, or does he think that he's quoting things other than pshat? But again, that's not for our discussion today. Be that as it may, he says, my Zaydi learned, gave a perish of Tanakh, al Pip Shat. V'afani Shmuel bar-Meir chasno zatzanis v'kachti imo ulefanav v'hodili shilu hayalo penai hayatzach lasos perushim acherim. So I used to argue with him and say, you know, Rashi, Zaydi, you know, this isn't Pshat. And he told me that if he had time, these conversations presumably took place towards the end of Rashi's life, but if he had time, he would write another Peirush. Doesn't mean he would throw out his old Peirush, but he would write a new Peirush. Lefi hapashtos hamischadshim b'chol yom. According to the new Pshatim, you know, just like we say, ein beis medrash b'lo chiddush, Yishalmi says, ein beis medrash b'lo chiddush b'chol yom. I think he's alluding to that lashon. So when you learn Pshat, when you learn Omek HaPshat, there's also chidushim pshat. Each time you learn pshat, you know, hopefully every week we do shnai mikra, even if we've done it for many years before. If we're going slowly, if we're reading carefully, we're going to see new ideas, new haros in pshat. In pshat, it's not like there's one pshat and that one pshat is correct. There's nothing else. No, if we're learning carefully, we will see new perushim hamischadshim b'chol yom. Ve'ata yiru hamaskilim ma shepirshu harishonim. Now, what does he mean by pshat? So we all know, if we've learned Rashbam, that he really is pshat in the sense of looking at the text on its own without looking at any other tools of interpretation, just the text. It's very deep, it's very profound. I gave you an example over here from this week's parsha, tremendous Rashbam. We won't read it inside, but just to get a flavor. So we all know, of course, that who sold Yosef into slavery? So we'll all assume that the answer is, of course, the brothers. The brothers sold Yosef into slavery. Rashbam points out that if we read the Pesukim carefully, the Pesukim do not say that. In fact, they imply something else. So let's look at the Pesukim carefully. Vayomer Yehuda el Achav, Ma betza ki narog zachino v'chino esdamos. Yehuda says to his brothers, what's the point in killing him? L'chuvenim kerenu li'yishme'elim. Let us sell him to the Yishmaelim, the Adenu Altivo, Kiachinu Visarenu, who the Yishma'u Echav. So the brothers agree that they should sell him to the Yishmaelim. Ve'avru anashim Midyanim, Socharim. So some Midianites pass by. Vayim Shechu Vayalu Es Yosef Minabor. And they pull Yosef out of the boar. Who? So if we look at the word that was most previously modified, it's the Midyanim. The Midyanim, it sounds like, pull Yosef out of the boar. And who sells him to the Yishmaelim? Again, if we're looking at the most recent noun, it's the Midyanim who sell him to the Yishmaelim. Besrim kasav yaviu Yosef al Mitzrayim. So Rashi is aware of this issue. Kedarko, when he tries to explain what happened. Rashbam, though, says if we're looking at the Omek HaPshat, take a look, read it inside, it actually sounds like what happens is that while the brothers were schmoozing about what to do with Yosef, they had left him in this pit. Maybe they went to go eat lunch or something. And the Midyanim see him in the pit and they pull him out and the Midyanim sell him to the Yishmaelim. The brothers didn't actually sell him. That might explain why the brothers don't go looking for him after they see how desperate Yaakov is, because they actually had no clue where he was and where he ended up. Be that as it may, here you have a great example of how, if we look at the Pesukim very carefully, we, according to Rashbam at least, you could argue on the level of Pshat, but at least the Rashbam thought on the level of Pshat, it comes out that it's quite a different story than Chazal tell us. Now, I would point out that it's not like, even according to Rashbam's Pshat, we would not blame the brothers for the sale of Yosef. It doesn't change that much in a certain sense. Lemaisa, the brothers were planning to sell Yosef, and they were responsible for his sale to Mitzrayim. So you could argue that whether or not they did it or not is not as consequential. Nevertheless, here we have a great example of Pshat, Omek HaPshat. And again, we have now two questions that I want to think about. Number one is, why is it that Chazal weren't so interested in Pshat, as the Rashbam points out? Why is it that even after Rashbam obviously thinks Pshuto Shel Mikra is very valuable, it's very important. He spent a lot of time writing a Sefer on Pshuto Shel Mikra, but he still acknowledges that that's not the Iker way of learning Chumash. So why isn't it the Iker way of learning Chumash? After all, I would think that it should be the Iker way. That is the Dvar Hashem. That is literally the words of God, right? Why wouldn't that be the Iker? And what exactly is Medrash trying to do? And I would add, especially, this is a fascinating question, when we have a different story in Chazal versus Pshat. In other words, if we were to ask, what actually happened? What happened to Alpi Pshat? What happened to Alpi Drash? And we have a different answer, which makes you wonder, and here we're coming back to our question about history, makes you wonder what actually happened. I mean, there was an actual event in the world. So did the story take place as described in Chazal, as described by the Drash or by the Pshat? There might not be one answer to this question. It might be always drash, always pshat, maybe some and some. Maybe it depends on the thing. I'd like to show you a couple of sources, and there are many more, where at least some mefarshim seem to take for granted that in terms of the actual event that happened, the event happened based off of what we see in pshat. So we'll give two examples of this. As I said, we could give more as well. One is from the Ran in his drashos. I picked this example because it relates to our discussion in the last number of weeks about the nature of hashkacha. So the Ran in his eighth drasha asserts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't usually intervene supernaturally to affect individuals, right? Like we know, sinners aren't immediately struck by lightning. And he uses this principle to deal with the question of why the wicked suffer and the righteous prosper. And the answer is, Hashem doesn't always intervene, certainly not supernaturally. And then he uses the idea to explain a fascinating and perplexing pasuk. So here's the pasuk that he's going to work on. This is from Bamidbar Parakas. Ki nisunim heimali, mitoch b'nei Yisrael, tachas kol pitras, kol rechem b'chor kol, mibnei Yisrael, lakach li osam li, Kili kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael ba'adam v'abehima v'yom ha'kosi kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim hikdashti osam li. So this pasuk, we're told that originally the b'chorim were sanctified in Mitzrayim when they were spared makas b'choros, and The Kohanim went and they took their place, and that's the basis of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen on every Peter Rechem. Now, the Ran asks an interesting question, which is, why should the Jewish firstborns owe a extra gratitude to God for sparing them during Makas Bechoros? After all, they weren't deserving of death in the first place. I mean, Hashem smote the Mitzrayim because the Mitzrayim were chayim. Why does the Bechor owe something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he was spared Makas Bechoros, which is what the Pasuk says, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was zoiche in the Bechorim. Why? Because they were spared Makas Bechoros. Mechatesi, they should have been killed in Makas Bechoros. What's the Havamina? That's the question that the Ran asks. And the answer is, he says, that based off of my theory that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't use supernatural intervention when unneeded, so there is a special thing over here that the Bechorim owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Namely, and this is even fascinating because we're even talking about in the midst of the Ten Makos, he says like this, what must have happened? What must have happened was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made some type of disease that affected firstborn children, and specifically Peter Rechem, firstborn from the mother. And therefore, really what should have happened was all firstborns should have died, including the Jews. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and does supernaturally intervene and save the Jews. In other words, they were spared miraculously of this disease that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And therefore, he says, so it must be, it makes a lot of sense, that the Jewish firstborns should now are, as it were, nicknames to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? They owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu a special gratitude for having been supernaturally spared this type of biological condition that affected the Peterechems of the people living in Egypt at that time. That's the way he understands the Pesukim. And he says this very well explains beautifully why the mitzvah Pidyon HaBen only applies to firstborn children of the mother, not of the father, not Bechor Min Av, because they were not spared this biological condition, so they don't owe anything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now then the Ran writes, but I know that this contradicts the Medrash, right? Because the Medrash says that the oldest child died, whether it's Bechor Min Av, whether it's Bechor Min Eim. Rashi even quotes the Drasha that Ein Bais Asher Ein Shameis, as the Pasuk says, so that includes, whoever was the oldest, whatever it is. So the Ran says, no, isn't my pshat, my interpretation, going against Chazal? So he answers, yes, but my pshat is correct, I'll peep pshat. And let's look how he puts that. In other words, he thinks that, when we're doing Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's okay to argue with Chazal. It's not really going against Chazal necessarily, because Chazal weren't trying to explain the Pshat, like we saw in Reshbam. Chazal were explaining the Chumashim al-Pidrash. But what I want to look for here is to look at what the Ran says in terms of what actually happened. So let's look at what he says. Next source. Al-Pi, af al-Pi, sha'amru b'medrash, Ein Bais Asher Ein Sham Meis, Ein Sham Bechor, Gadol HaBais Kari Bechor, that every house had a mace, meaning to say if there was no Bechor, so it was the Gadol HaBais was the Bechor. Zehu Al Tzad HaDrash, Afal Kefi Pshuto Shal Davar, HaBechoro Shayu Nitlin B'Pitri, Rechamim Heim Shalaku. V'haya B'neim, Yachas LaKesher, Asher Mitzad HaYachas Haya, Yachas HaHu, Haya Ra'wi Shiyilku Kol Bechor Yisrael, Im Yanicham Hashem Litivam. Umipneza Amar Hashem is Barach Shemipnesha Hagen Baadam, Yetzilam and Ara, Shayaroy Lachul Alayam, Kidesh Osam Li. Now, we don't have to work on now the Herman, whether this is a good pshat or not, could you ask Kashas or the biological merits of this pshat? That's not our Indian right now. For our purpose, what seems to me is that the Ran is saying that, at least in this case, what actually happened in Mitzrayim corresponds to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, not what Chazal were saying. We'll just give one other example from the Parsha coming up in a couple of weeks. This is from the Abarbanel in his Haggadah Shel Pesach. And he writes like this. Where were the sons of Yaakov buried? So the Psukim tell us about how Moshe brought up Atzmos Yosef. Atzmos Yosef were buried in Eretz Yisrael, but it doesn't tell us anything about the other 11 brothers. So Chazal do. Chazal tell us that all 12 brothers were buried in Eretz Yisrael. However, the Abarbanel argues that that is true Al Pi Drash, but it's not Al Pi Pshat. Al Pi Pshat, if that were the case, it should have stated so. Now, this relates to another important methodological point, which is beyond the scope of today's shiur, which is what can you extrapolate from omission? This is something that, for example, Ramban and Ibn Ezra argue about frequently. Not our topic. What I think is interesting is, again, what does the Abarbanel tell us about what actually happened? So let's take a look. Vaikach Moshe asmos Yosef imo veikru osam b'shchem. Right? Av ashar shvatim nikru mitzrayim. V'im ha-yosha chazal darshu al ve'alei sem es asmosai mizeitchem sh'av shar shvatim helu imahem hu derech drash u'pshara kasuv lo yisbalto sh'amar vaikach Moshe asmos Yosef ki ashpeya hishbiya v'chulei. So again, I think it sounds like if you were to ask Abarbanel what actually happened, he would say that the Shvatim were actually buried in Egypt. Now, if so, then we have a very interesting question. Now we could see how the two questions that I brought up are related. In other words, what does this tell us about our perspective on history? If Iker is Drash, and the Drash doesn't necessarily correspond to the actual events, sometimes it might, but not necessarily. So then what is that all about? What is that all about? What is the purpose of Drash? And this is true in other ways as well. What about Midrashim that tell us stories that are unimaginable, right? Are we meant to take them literally? So many, many Rishonim, certainly the Rambam, the Rashba, and others, and Achronim, like the Ramchal, and others point out that you're not supposed to take those Midrashim literally. When it talks about how tall Og was, and what he did to Moshe and all those things, those shouldn't be understood literally. The Rambam writes this in many places, including in his Hakdama to Parak Chelek, where he talks about how what our approach is supposed to be to looking at Midrashim of this sort. And he says that you're not meant to understand them literally. And others say this as well, in which case, again, so what is the goal of the Medrash? You know, why is it telling us these stories if they don't correspond to reality? So that's our question. Our question is, why were Chazal uninterested in history in terms of recording the history, right? Why doesn't Chazal tell us our history? Even the story of Hanukkah, we don't have in Chazal. Why not? Isn't that important to know? And number two, perhaps the focus on Drash might reflect that same perspective in terms of the lack of interest in history, alt history. What does that mean? What does that tell us? So we're going to consider a couple of approaches, but really we're going to try to develop one mahalich. So maybe the answer is, to use the words of Chazal, my dehavi havi. Whatever happened, happened. In other words, what difference does it make now? The events of the past are not particularly important. That's just the past. And perhaps we see Chazal actually making this point. Take a look at the Gemara in Yuma, Hamad Beis, the next Gemara. The Gemara over here is discussing the question of the order in which the Kohanim were dressed during the inauguration of their kahuna. And the Gemara says like this, Ketzad Hil Bishan, how did Moshe dress the Kohanim? Ketzad Hil Bishan, my davi avi, who cares? What difference does it make? Ela Ketzad Malbishan, Lasad Lavo. So the first answer is no. If there's a nafkamina, we got to know. Right? We'll find out then. We don't have to worry about that now either. It's an interesting shaila. Hilchasa de Meshicha. Ella, ketzad hilbishan lemizbar krai. Ah, what happened? Because we need to teach the psukim. Meaning to say that we have to know how to read the psukim. That's important. What happened, happened. If you're just asking me, like, from a perspective of history, might have a oh, you want to know how to read the psukim, that's important. So then we have a machlaikas, b'liba, b'nei marava, b'nei rabbi chiyav, rabbi yochanan. Fine. Another place where you might see this is a Gemara in Shabbos over here. Amar Yidam Shmuel, Makoshesh, Mavir Arba Amar Avasushis Arabim, Masnisa Tana Tole Shaya, Ravacha, Bar Yaakov Amar, Ma'amar Havei, L'mayna Afkamina. So we have different things in terms of what did the Makoshesh do. The Gemara says L'mayna Afkamina, and it gives an answer. Another Gemara, Chulin Yedzayin Abad Aleph, Bar Yab Yirmiya, we want to know what's the halacha in the midbar, at least according to one opinion. So, what happens if they brought into Eretz Yisrael? So, interesting, Shaila, what are we asking for? So, look at Rashi. Says, Drosh Kabal Schar, who Shetrichan Anu Lamod Ala Emes, Bafal Pishikvar. So, Rashi says, actually, at least in this case, knowing what happened is interesting, even if there is no nafkamina, Drosh Kabal Schar. The Rash objects, right? He first quotes Rashi Vlonira, Didafkal Mizbar Kray Darshinan, Afal Bishkvar Avar, Avalakvoa, Bayabashas, Bidavashain Botsarach Lashkan. Who cares what happened if there's no, if it's not relevant, Lafarisha Samikra, where there's no Nafkamina. And he quotes this Gemara that we saw on Yoma, Ayin Sham. So the Rash comes up with a Nafkamina of why it might be relevant. But Stam to know what happened in the past, if there's no halachic Nafkamina, or it's not relevant in terms of teaching the Psukim, my dehave have. Maybe we'll say that knowing the past in and of itself is just a waste of time. Perhaps another reflection of this is in the Hakdama to the Rambam in Perek HaChelek. We referred to it before, but now he's making a different point here, fascinating point. The Mishnah over there refers to Svarim Chitzonim. Somebody who reads Svarim Chitzonim is no chelek in Olam Haba. So what is Svarim Chitzonim? So one possibility is it refers to heretical works. The Rambam doesn't think that. It's also to read heretical works as well, as he discusses over there. But that's not what Svarim Chitzonim are referring to, or I should say, it's not limited to that, right? So what's included in Svarim Chitzonim? Ben Sira. What is Ben Sira? The Rambam writes over here, V'huaya ish shechiber Svarim jeshbem hatulim me'inyanei hakaras hapanim ein bam tam v'lo toalas. You know, it's interesting. I mean, there are a couple of places where Chazal even quote Ben Sira, but most part, the Rambam says it's just a waste of time. El ibud hazman behevel. And now he gives us other examples of things that are a waste of time. What are things that are a waste of time? Kagon, Eila Sarman and Soim, Eitzel Ha'arav, Nesipor Devei Yamim. So we have these stories in history books, the Hanhagos Hamalachim, and the things that the kings do, the Yechusei Ha'arvim, and the books of, I don't know, Yichus, Vesipuri Hanigun, Ayin Sham. Right? And he says these things are all Ibud Zman Bilva. Now, Stam, it's interesant. Okay, Ibud Zman, but Ein L'chel Gom Haba. Very interesting. It's for another time we could have a shmuz about this, but it certainly highlights the importance of using your time well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you time on this world. Don't waste it. Relates to the Rambam's theory in the Perish Mishnayis as to why Masach HaBekuvia is Apostle Eidus. The Rambam there also says, basically, because he's wasting his time. But again, for another time. Here is writing that reading at least certain types of history books, like these Divrei Hayamim, these chronologies, something like that, is a waste of time, a huge, colossal waste of time. Why? Might have a who cares? I think we see this idea also in a very powerful way. In the Zohar. So the Zohar writes that there is little value in knowing interesting historical tidbits. And that's why the Zohar asks, so when you see what seems to be an irrelevant historical tidbit in the Torah, we have to figure out what's the omek, what is the panemius, because it couldn't be that the Torah is just something of little value, even though it's history. It's history. But just because it's history doesn't mean it's worth knowing, right? And so, for example, the Pasuk says that the Teva rested on Hare Ararat. The Zohar asks, who cares? Who cares? What difference does it make where it landed? It landed somewhere. Why does it need to tell us that it landed on Hare Ararat? And of course, the Zohar answers that there must be a panemistic answer. There must be something below the surface that's being taught here. What that is doesn't need to concern us now. We're not learning Zohar. But the point that the Zohar brings out is so, so fundamental, which is, who cares? And Zohar says it even stronger. Zohar says something very powerful. It says that, let's say it's true historically. Okay. I mean, certainly we believe it. We believe that the Teva landed on Hare Ararat, wherever that is. But transmitting that information, if that's all the Torah is doing, then it wouldn't be a Torah's emes. It wouldn't be, what do you mean it wouldn't be emes? Of course, it's emes because it's true. So we have to understand, what's Torah's emes mean? Torah's emes doesn't just mean that it's true in the sense of being factually true. The fact that it's Torah's emes is something much deeper than just being factually true. Something could be factually true and not be emes. So let's take a look at how the Zohar puts it. Very powerful lashon. Deha uraisa deihi klala ilah. Af agav denafek mina chad sipor be'alma. Vade lo asi l'achza'a alahu sipor. El l'achza'a al milin ilayim. V'razin ilayim. So the Torah is about teaching us these elevated concepts, these supernal concepts. And even though you have this story, and the stories of this Torah, you know, the truth is the Zohar writes in a different place, sometimes sound like folklore, right? You read the stories and you just translate them. It's folklore. You know, you could probably look at the Bible and it's studied in universities, you know, along with who knows what, Beowulf and Homer and, you know, other ancient folklores. And the Zohar even says, you know, if the Torah was just about folklore, there are better folklores than the Torah. You know, it doesn't even make the top of the list. So that's not what Torah is about. And not only, I mean, folklore is Baba Mises, but even if the Torah is true, that's not what it's about. It's about teaching us things that are elevated. And so if you see something that just looks like a story, just looks like folklore, it must be there's something here. It must be it's teaching us something. V'lo l'lamed al atzmo yatza, l'lamed al klal kulo yatza. B'gein al yusipor de oraisa, o awuvda. Af agav davi nafka mechlala de oraisa, lo lachza al garmei, nafak bilvad, el lachza al hauklala ila de oraisa, kula nafak. Right? So there are these kaliyistika inyanim, and the story is being megala something relating to that klal. And it gives us a story. An example, I mean, kigoyin, ha'ay dechsev, v'atanach ha'teva b'chodesh ha'shvi'i b'shivasar yom l'chodesh al har'ay arirat. V'aday ha'ay kwa b'chlala d'ayraisa nafak. V'asi b'sipor d'alma, it's just coming and telling us this story. If that's it, that's the purpose. Ma'ich b'slan ishari b'hai, oh b'hai. What difference does it make if it landed on this mountain or that mountain? Why did the Torah have to say it landed on Hare Ararat? Dahab the Asar Chad Lishri, landed somewhere. Who cares where? El Lamed Ala Klal Kulo Yatza. Vizakain Inon Yisrael. Dis Yayav Luhu Oiraisa Ilah. Oiraisa Dekashut. Right? So we were Zaycha to get this true Torah, this elevated Torah, this supernal Torah, this Emes Dika Torah. And somebody who says that, why does it just tell us, just to tell us the story? Why does it tell us where it landed? Because it's telling us the story. This is a detail in the story, you know, when you're writing a story. So it's nice to include details. Makes it a more gripping story. So therefore, it tells us the detail. If that's what you think, tipach ruchei, dihachi, if that were true, if it was just here for the story, if it's just a nice detail, that would mean that the Torah is not a oiraisa ila'a. It's not an oiraisa dekashot. It's not true. It's factually true, but it's not emistic. Elevada oiraisa kedisha ila'a e oiraisa dekashot. Torah is ila'a. It's kadosh. It's kashot. And the Zohar continues, says that it would be undignified for a human king to engage in such trivial conversation, much less so write it down. It's inconceivable that the Melech Malchei HaMelechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu would include such deep. It must be that it's teaching us something deep, something profound. The Rambam also writes this in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, like we mentioned, the next source as well. The Rambam over here, in fact, tells us that this concept is from the Ikarei Emuna. So in the Yesod HaShmini, which is Termina Shemayim, he tells us, I'm reading where it's bolded, every letter of Torah, every word of Torah is full of deep and profound wisdom to someone who understands. The lo tusag tachlis achachma. So we can't expect human beings to understand everything. Why? Because it reflects Hashem's divine infinite wisdom. It's arucha me'eretz mida, rochava mineyam. And he writes over here about the people who used to make fun of Torah because they saw in Torah trivial information, irrelevant information, silly information. And that's kfira. That's kfira. And he writes remarkably that be'etzem, there's no difference between a pasuk like B'nei Cham Kush, U'mitzrayim, U'put, U'kanan, and a pasuk like Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. It's all mipi agvura. It's all male chachma. And someone who goes ahead and is dismissive of parts of the Torah, makes fun of them, says, that's kfira. That's a denial in a certain respect of termina shemayim. And therefore, what are we meant to do when we look at Torah? The Ein Adam Ela L'Spalo. All we have to do is daven Hashem, like David HaMelech says, Gal Einai V'Abita Niflos MiTorasecha. Open up my eyes. Let me see that Chachma that I know is there. That's what the Rambam writes. In other words, knowing these historical facts without understanding their meaning is of little value. I happen to know where the Tevel landed. And if it ends there, not so valuable. You might, get a good grade on a Chidon Tanakh because you know all sorts of Torah trivia. Where did this happen? But of little value, right? And certainly, if you think that's all there is, Tipachuche. The Gra writes this even regarding the stories of the Torah. Be'etzemai d'havei, look at the Gra. She's explaining the pasuk over here in Mishlei, which refers to Mashal Umalitza. So he writes, what is Mashal Umalitza referring to? So Mashal Umalitza are relating to Tarsha Bechsav. The Mashal Hu Siporia Torah, Umalitza Hu Hapnimi. Oh. So first of all, what is Mashal? Mashal is the stories of the Torah. So why are the stories of the Torah called a Mashal? So the answer clearly is that because what are we supposed to get out of the stories of the Torah? It's a mashal for something else. Again, of course they happened. When the Gra says the stories of the Torah are referred to in the pasuk as a mashal, he's not saying that they're an allegory that didn't happen. They happened. But the value of our knowing them is not alt's history, Shabbat. It's understanding the meaning. And that's the melitza. The melitza is the pnimius. What are these stories coming to tell us? So if it's Achlav and Shem, you have to know both. You have to know the mashal and the melitza. Shalolios machesh pshutei asipurim, chas v'shalom, to be machesh the pashtos, avalios mamin osam kavayasam, so they did happen as stated. Im shalot toil ma'od yediasam. However, in the end of the day, how valuable is that to know the stories, to know the history? Not so much. D'may d'ave ave. Because klape the history, no, whatever happened, happened. Aval, de osenu ktsaros milahasik toalas pshutayim. Oh. Now, we don't have time to elaborate because we're just beginning our theory and I still want to get back to Hanukkah. But if you look at the next bunch of sources, I think you'll see another reflection of this idea in a couple of Rambans that I gave you, three or four Rambans, and you see it actually throughout his whole pshat. These are places in the Ramban where he's telling you what happened, and he should have said, well, I'll be pshat, this is what happened, and I'll be drash, this is what happened. So, for example, even about things as important as how the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael. So the Ramban over here writes, Al derech Moseinu, in other words, according to the drash, kol mitzvos namru b'sinai, kol sem pratasem dikdukehem, v'nishnu ba'ol moed. So what happened was all the details were given at Sinai and then repeated at Ol Moed. And then he says, Val derech ha-pshat, shiur asher tziva Hashem es Moshe bar Sinai, uv'yom tzavosos b'nei Yisrael, b'mid bar Sinai, akvus karuneim. No, some things were given at Har Sinai, some things were given at mid bar Sinai, which is Ol Moed and the like. You know, so, you know, you could ask, if your goal was to study history, right? If that's what was important, so it would be very important to know, you know, how they were given over. Ramban says, you want to know what happened? I'll be pshat, this is what happened. I'll be drash, this was what happened. Or here's another example. This is even more remarkable. He quotes the famous Chazal about what happened to Avraham Avinu or Kazdim. He's thrown into the furnace, et cetera, and miraculously saved. And he says, you know, it's interesting. The same story is recorded in a Gaish book called the Nabataean Agriculture. And there he says, we have a different version of the story. Avram wasn't an Eish Niglu, it was an Eish Nister. Avram Avinu wasn't thrown into a fiery pit, but he was expelled from the country. And miraculously, the king didn't kill him, but let him just go, only taking away all his money. And the Ramban over here in three or four places, I think, at least three, he sort of refers to both versions of the story. Again, clearly, what literally happened is not the Iker. So why is there so little interest in what actually happened? And I would add one more thing, which is certainly the priority of message over historicity is expressed by the principle of Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, which more or less means that if there's a mila to presenting the story out of order, again, it's not random, it's not haphazard, but if there's some reason to go out of order, so then that's what the Torah does. In other words, if you're writing a history book, so you wouldn't do that. But the goal of Torah is not about just presenting the history. So that's what we seem to be saying. So, okay. So if we have this concept of Ma'ida HaVehavi, what does that tell us? Does that mean that we shouldn't study history at all? Maybe we shouldn't study history, right? Maybe we should be medayik from the fact that Chazal really don't spend much time on history, that it's a waste of time. Ma'ida HaVehavi, we should learn Gemara, we should learn the Midrashim and the Rishonim, but we don't need to study history. So I don't think that's correct either. Zechor Yemos Olam, actually, look at the Ramban over there. I think that there is a tremendous toeles to studying history. I'm bringing for you two contemporary sources, the words of my own Rebbe, that emphasize this. And I think what we're going to say is not that history is worthless, but you have to know how to study history. So here are the two sources, the two citations. I think we could cite many, including earlier ones. This is from Rav Tursky. To be a Jew, to live as a Jew, means to live with a sense of history. A Jew's history constitutes who he is, what he is, how he lives, and what he aspires. From Rav Aaron, we need to teach our children history. And that history needs to include much more than dry names and dates and stories of Gedolim, which is why the way sometimes history is taught in schools or in books. They need to have an accurate understanding of the experiences of the Jewish communities of each generation, the daily life, the hardships, the challenges, the successes, and the wounds. The Pasuk implores us, Binu Shnos Dor Vador. So this is right. So what then does Ma'ida HaVehavi mean? And I think the answer is that some details of history are of little value. It is of no value to know how the Kohanim were addressed by Moshe, the order, unless there is either a nafka mina or it's relevant to Taitz the Pesukim. Otherwise, who cares? The study of history is valuable, though, when it brings a person to an awareness of God's hashgacha in world history, or gives them a better understanding of who they are and where they should go. Studying history will help us understand current events and how to deal with our current events. Sometimes, if you've never studied history, you think that whatever crisis you happen to be going through now, this is new. You study history, you realize, Ein chadash tachas ha-shamesh. And you could look to the responses of history, both those that have worked and those that have failed, to help you address your questions now. We need to know our past. So my Dave Ave does not mean to say that there's no value in studying. So why then don't Chazal focus on history? Why is it that there's little focus on Pshat? Again, they don't devalue Pshat. Ein mikriyotzim de pshuto, but certainly it's not the focus. So the answer is, as we will see, because they were focused on teaching us the message of the Chumash, which is communicated through Drash, the message of history, which is communicated through the stories and practices that emerge from the stories as Chazal communicate. Now, before going there, though, I want to just point out that there are dangers in studying history that we have to be aware of, which might also relate to why Chazal did have very little interest in studying history, perhaps especially as seen in the story of Hanukkah. Rav Schwab actually was the first source that I actually saw ask this question. This is a piece that I gave you over here. It was originally published in the Breuer's Journal and reprinted in Selected Writings. And Rav Schwab basically notes that, as we said before, the story of Hanukkah is described in detail in the books of the Book of Maccabees. But in Chazal, the way he put it is, there are only a few scant references to this epic drama. And moreover, here's where you have the quote, "We have no authentic description of our Tanaim of the period of the Chorban, the Jewish war against the Romans, the destruction of the Jewish state, the revolt, and the downfall of Bar Kokhba, except for a few Agadic statements in Talmud and Medrash. For our historical knowledge, we have only to rely on the renegade Josephus Flavius, who was a friend of Rome and a traitor to his people." All right, where are those stories? That doesn't mean, by the way, you know, it's interesting. You look at the Mishnah Berurah when he writes about the things that are okay and even suggested to read on Tisha B'Av. He has Yosefon. Yosefon isn't quite Josephus, but it's a medieval sort of version of it. But it's fascinating, right? Again, you want to know those stories. So, and here's so fascinating, right? You want to know the story of the Chorban and Yerushalayim from Chazal. What do you look at? You look at the Gemaras and the Gittin, the Agaditas. They tell you a story, but they don't tell you the history. They tell you stories. And again, what we're going to explain is they tell you the lessons we're supposed to gain from those stories, but not the history. Come to think of it, Rav Schwab writes, since the close of Tanakh, at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, we have no Jewish history book composed by our Sofrim Tanaim Namoraim. The prophets and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah have recorded all the events of their days as well as the previous periods. When prophecy ceased, recording Jewish history stopped at the same time. Why did our great Torah leaders not deem it necessary to register in details all the events of their period, just as in the Vim had done before them? Now, Rav Schwab suggests a fascinating answer. He basically says that it would be a violation of Lashon Hara. There's a vast difference between history and storytelling. History must be truthful, otherwise it does not deserve its name. A book of history must report the ugly and the beautiful, the guilt and the virtue. It cannot spare the righteous if he fails, and cannot skip the virtues of the villain. right? History is to be complete. And he basically says that to do that, you need to be a Navi, right? In this week's Parsha, we read about the mistakes that great people like Yaakov, Yosef, the Shvatim made. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can write that down. But a historian, even if he knows that it happened, has no right to do that. You have to consider Lashon Hara L'Toelas. There's an interesting shaila about Lashon Hara L'Chamisa. Is it Mikra Adin? Is it from Chaim HaGaonim or the like? But a very fascinating idea. And that's important. You know, if you want to do history, you have to include the unflattering truths. And Rav Schwab at least thinks that if you're not a Navi, you can't. Along similar lines, though, a different point. I saw a piece from Rav Shlomo Brevda. He has a sefer on Hanukkah called Lahodos Lahalal, and it's actually adapted into English by a Talmud of our yeshiva, Rav Eliron Levinson. It's called The Miracles of Hanukkah. And he also is troubled by this issue. He writes that Chazal deliberately concealed much of the Hanukkah story in order to protect us from harmful material. So besides what Rav Schwab said, that maybe it's not always mutter to write history, like every Lashon Hara Shaila, you have to think very carefully about that and examine the sources. But sometimes we're better off not knowing what happened. This, as well as Rav Schwab's theory, might relate to very interesting Shaila about the missing years. Rav Schwab actually also has a theory about that, which he somewhat retracted. That's for another time. But anyway, he says that Chazal actually concealed the story of Hanukkah. Maybe it's dangerous for us to know that. And he says, where do we have a precedent for that? A precedent is in the Ramban's comments at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, where he observes that the Torah omitted much of the history of Avram Avinu. Ramban asks, it's very strange. Now, Noach starts with his history. Right? We know why he was chosen. Avram Avinu starts from scratch. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose Avram Avinu? So Chazal tell us about his early history. Like we said before, he's Moser Nefesh Bor Kasdim. So why didn't the Torah include it? And the answer is, says the Ramban, that if we were to tell the story, we would have had to talk about Avram Avinu's engagement with Avodah Zarah. And that's something that the Torah doesn't want to tell us. And so therefore it leaves it out. Very interesting. And it's also interesting because Chazal have it, but as stories. Chazal have it as stories. We have to be careful. There's dangers in sometimes knowing what happened. And especially if you don't know how to entice it, if you don't know how to interpret it. So these are the theories of two great thinkers why the story of Hanukkah is not in traditional sources. I think they're good theories, but I don't think they communicate the whole story. Because I think the whole story is that Chazal be'etzem did not oppose that we study history, but really what their goal was and what their interest was is that we understand history. And that is the message that they communicated. And here too, I think it's very similar to what we talked about before in terms of Pshat and Drash. It's not like Pshat is bad and they didn't oppose the study of Pshat. But their interest and their focus was understanding the ideas behind the story, what's really behind the story, not just the events, but the ideas behind them. And this is an idea that you see in many sources, perhaps most ostensibly in Maral. Maral over here is discussing an interesting question. He writes that the Torah's focus is on that which is meaningful and teaching us that meaning. History doesn't have that same inherent value. History, without knowing how to understand it, is mikra. It's not be'etzem valuable. It doesn't have that same inherent significance. What Chazal teach us, the stories, those do. Maral writes that Torah is not meant to be a history book. It's not meant to be a biology book. And it's not meant to be read as such. And when you read it in that way, you come up with the wrong message. Let's give a mashal from the Maral. Chazal tell us that we have 248 Evarim and 365 Gidim. A person could read that and say, okay, what are Chazal telling us? They're giving me a lesson in anatomy, human anatomy. And then I might also actually go start like trying to open up an anatomy book and say, oh, you know what? There's a stira between Chazal and the science. Oh, we have problems of Torah and science contradictions. The answer is that such a person has no idea what Chazal are trying to do. When Chazal tells us 365 Gidim, it's telling us something about the nature of our body and the connection to the year. Chazal tell us there are 613 mitzvos. It's telling us that the way to perfect and sanctify the physical body is through mitzvos. And therefore, the mitzvos correspond to the Evarim and the Gidim. They're not teaching us a lesson in biology. Along similar lines, and again, we don't have to hide, but take a look over here, this idea, which appears in the Baragola. The Baragola over here, the Baragola is the Maral's work in which he is sort of responding to the challenges against Chazal. The challenges that were common in his time and are still common nowadays. And of course, one of the classical challenges is that Chazal didn't know science because look at what they say about science. And Maral's answer is you don't know Chazal. You don't know how to read Chazal. And it's not just Chazal, it's Torah as well. Lamashal. The Torah tells us about the reason for the rain after the Mabul. It's an os. And somebody could go ahead and read that and say, look, the Torah didn't know science because we know that the cause of a rainbow is refraction. There's a scientific reason. So, or they'll say, okay, look, there's a stira between between Torah and science. Torah and science contradictions. And Aral tells us, no, if you think there's a stira, it's because you don't know how to read Torah. The Torah is not interested in teaching us the science. It's not teaching us the physical reason. That's appropriate for scientists, for doctors. The Torah is coming to teach us the reason. Okay, of course the reason for a rainbow is refraction, but why is refraction? What's the reason behind the reason? Let's talk just a little bit. So he's talking about here the Tluna Hashishas, Ba'amram, Ki Hayanela Mehem Chachma Anoshis. Heim HaChachmas Asher Lefi Asechal Anoshi V'lo Yishiya Nela Mehem Rak Davru Ba'hem B'tachlas Hazaros. If it was true that Chazal made these scientific errors, they wrote about scientific things without knowing about science, so they wouldn't even be following their own advice, because Chazal tells you have to be truthful. You only have to say things that you know. So what are they doing? The Chachma Sh'amra Aleyem Ch'dibu Rem Zaros, Ki HaChachma Tivis, the Chachma Limudis, Barlecha, Ki Chosha Hiviyem Ladavar Zeh, Lachshov Al Chachamim Kach, Zeh Ma Shematzu B'dvarim, Shenasnu Sibos L'dvarim Tiviyem, Shenishavim Ba'olam. V'haya Nirela Ki HaSibos Ha'elu, Heim Rechokim, Shia Davar Zeh Siba Tivis. Uvishvil Zeh Amru Aleyem, Shayu Rechokim Chachma Zeh. Aval Eino Emes Kach Klal, Ki Lo Bo Chachamim L'dabe, Min Asiba Hativis, Ki Kachos Asiba Hativis, Ki Davar Zeh Yeos L'chachmei Ateva, O L'rofim, Lo L'chachm, Heim Zal Dibru Min Asiba Chayev Ateva, And this is exactly the idea we saw in the Gra before, in terms of the difference between the mashal and the melitza, the difference between the pshat and the pnimius. Chazal's agenda is to not just teach us the historical events, but to teach us how to interpret them. But that doesn't mean that the historical events aren't important, just like Lamashal we said about Pshat. What's important is that we understand what's behind them. So the Maral concedes that the scientists, Tzaka, got it right when they told us the proximate cause for a rainbow was refraction. But that's not the interest of the Torah. Sometimes, if understood superficially, you'll see that there's a stira. But the emes is there won't be a stira. Rav talks about this a lot And we don't have time to go into it now. It relates to his idea of epistemological pluralism, how there could be multiple ways to view the same thing, each of which are true. And there isn't always a need to reconcile them. Going back to our discussion of his. So if you want to study the facts, sometimes it is valuable to look at the secular sources or the non-Chazal sources, whether it's the Book of the Maccabees or Josephus or the like. If you want to understand the reasons behind the reasons, then we have to look at Chazal. If you want to understand the reasons behind the Churban Bayis Sheni. So you might get some idea in Josephus, but you have to learn the Agadita in Hanizakin. And more importantly, we have to sort of get over sort of the axiomatic assumption in secular history, which is natural causation. So I don't think the Torah is rejecting history, and I don't think the Torah is rejecting science. It's interesting even that the Talmud of the Maral, of David Ganz, is actually one of the rare examples of a pre-modern Jewish historian. He wrote a book called Tzemach David, which includes two parts. The first is Jewish history, and the second is general history. And if you look at his Hakdama to the second part, he talks about why it's valuable to study history, even writes it's mutter to learn it on Shabbos, but you have to know how to do it. I think there's another reason and why Chazal didn't focus on history and why there's a danger in focusing on history we have to be careful about. Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, Psein Yitztagnina Shalcha. Studying history alone, at least without the right tools, could lead a person to the perspective that we are bound by history. And that's not so. From our very inception, we were told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are above history. Same it's Dagmino Shalcha. History, which focuses on secular causation, is not shayach to the Jewish people, who are zocha, as we've seen in the previous weeks, to a unique hashkacha. History reflects teva, and Klal Yisrael's lemala min teva. So let us review. What have we seen? We've seen that Chazal believe that there's little value in knowing what happened if you don't know how to interpret it. Chazal also believe that there's a danger in misinterpreting what happened. And this is true both in terms of history and even in terms of pshat, as Rashbam notes that the ikker form of learning isn't the pshat. Nevertheless, there's value in learning pshat, and there's value in learning history, as long as we know how to interpret that and see it through the Torah lens. That doesn't mean falsifying. It doesn't mean romanticizing. But it does mean doing so thoughtfully. The Torah is compared by the Zohar, the pshat, to a person's clothing. It's the aspect of a person that you first encounter. That's the pshat. And it's true. I mean, you can, you know, when you see a person, you see his clothing. But that doesn't reflect who the person really is. It doesn't get to the heart of the matter. It could even leave you with a false impression. The same thing is true about pshat. The same thing is true about historical events. What our job is to get to the depth, is to get to the reason behind the reason, as the Maral says, is to understand what the message is. And that's our job. It's a very hard job. Studying history is not simple, but is still very valuable. So to conclude, if you want to truly understand the story of Hanukkah, knowing the history might be valuable, but it's insufficient and sometimes misleading. Knowing the facts are not enough. We have to learn the lessons. We have to seek meaning, not just information. We have to remember that we as a people are people who've broken the patterns of history. And our past and our future is not shackled by the limitation of nature. Perhaps at the Chashmonaim, studied military history or current events, they never would have started off with the mighty Greeks. But instead, they studied Torah. And the rest is history. Okay. So we should all, I think next week, we don't meet. Everyone should have a Freilich al Chanukah. And in terms of what's next, so